My name is Nikki Appleton with Actuarial Edge. I'm your chair for today. We've got an interesting paper today from Grace, Sarucci and Huda on the silver economy, how the over-50s is shaping GI. Just before I read the bios for our speakers today, just a couple of quick housekeeping items. We've got about 25 minutes to listen to what the ladies have to say. We've just been asked that if you have a question, if you can go to the microphone and just state your name because it's being recorded. So Grace, all three of them are from PricewaterhouseCoopers. Grace is a senior manager in the actuarial practice. She's a qualified actuary with 9 years' experience in the financial services industry. She's advised on issues relating to pricing, reserving, portfolio monitoring and capital management. Sarucci Singh is a manager in the actuarial practice with 7 years' experience in general insurance industry in Australia. She's focused on reserving, portfolio monitoring, claims management, remuneration and EPR. Previously, Sarucci worked for 5 years with the Excel Group. And lastly, Huda. Huda is a senior consultant at PwC within the Actuarial Risk Services Department. She has 4 years' experience in the insurance industry in the UK, Pakistan and Australia. She specialises in providing health and life insurance advisory services and has worked extensively with mutual insurers. Her experience also includes conducting regulatory reviews and transitioning actuarial operations for clients undergoing changes in corporate structures. So I'll pass over. I think Sarucci is speaking first.
Thanks, Vicky. Just want to figure out how this works. Greetings, everyone. I am Sarucci from PwC, and I would like you to welcome all of you to our session, Silver Economy, How the Over-50s Will Reshape General Insurance. By silver, we refer to the over-50s age group, and I would just take you through a quick overview of our session. So aging population has been a cause of concern because of the dependency burden they are supposed to place on the working taxpayers. However, there is a growing realization that they actually present a great economic potential, and that is what we are going to see today in terms of the general insurance sector. We look at why they are going to present a potential, and which we term as silver tsunami, and some of the challenges that need to be addressed to tap into this market. Grace will then look at pricing differences by age and also talk about the relevance of age as a rating factor now and going forward, and touch on the topic of market disruptors. Huda will talk about some of the strategies that the general insurers can adopt, and also wrap up with final thoughts. And as mentioned, we'll have some time for questions and comments in the end. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge and thank Michael Playford, who is also one of the authors of this paper, for initiating this paper and also providing valuable guidance throughout. So why are we excited about this topic? Well, you may say that I'm excited about growing old. I am. But at the same time, the silver population presents a great economic potential. The three key reasons that it provides a potential is because of changing demographics, people are staying healthy for longer, and over 50s are spending big. The graph here shows that the over 65 population is going to double from being 13% in 2002 to nearly 25% in 2040. So the silver customer base is increasing. I need not point out that all of us in this room are going to join the silver population sooner or later, if not already. People are staying healthy for longer. Now, life expectancy has increased by 35 years over the last century. So it's currently 94 years for women and 93 years for men. This is like almost leading two lives, and the over 50s are living this second life in a much more independent and active way, which creates demand for products. So, for example, it's not uncommon to hear a person in their 60s or 70s traveling overseas and hence requiring travel insurance. I wish I'll be as active as this person at that age. But going on, another key factor is that over 50s account for nearly 75% of the Australian wealth. Not only that, they are spending it much faster than the younger generation. The graph here shows a study done in US of the spending over the last 10 years. So the spending by over 50s increased by 45% as against just a small 6% increase for the under 50s. So all these three factors, the growing silver base, the consumerism, and the wealth result in the silver tsunami. So given this huge potential, we thought it was imperative to look at some of the deficiencies in the general insurance market and so that, you know, we can address them and maybe tap into this opportunity. Some key themes that we identified were invisibility and stereotyping, age, a relative concept, mis-selling and misrepresentation, and issue of age discrimination, both on pricing and accessibility. So what do we mean by invisibility and stereotyping? As per a survey done by Australian Human Rights Commission, it was found that there is very low representation of the silver population in media. Only 4.7% of advertisement features over 65s, which is in fact a fast-growing demographic. Less than 30% of the participants felt that the elderly are portrayed in diverse ways or as role models in the media. And this was not just the over 50s, the participants were from all age groups. Related to stereotyping is the phenomenon that age is fast becoming a relative concept. So the over 50s do not identify themselves as a homogeneous group. As an illustration, we have shown here a table from a survey done in Luxembourg for the over 50s. Now, before you start adding the numbers and come back to me and say, this doesn't add up to 100, let me clarify that it won't, because more than one option could be chosen. Now, the results of this survey are quite interesting. Only 34% of the over 50s identified themselves as seniors. In fact, a good 76% said they were still young at heart. And 60% said they are at middle of life, but they also said that they are the best years of their life. So that's a very interesting result, and I think it raises the question whether general insurers need to look at new marketing strategies. We'll touch on this later. The next issue that we identified was mis-selling and misrepresentation. A good example is travel insurance, which usually excludes pre-existing conditions. Now, the IOS has been receiving growing complaints from Australians in the 70s and 80s because their policies were rejected due to pre-existing heart conditions. I'm sure none of us in this room want to be in that situation where they have gone on a vacation, comfortable in the belief that they are covered by a policy, by their travel policy, and then in the case of an unfortunate incident, they not only have to deal with the incident, but also have to come to terms with the fact that they are actually not covered because somewhere in the fine print, that particular thing was excluded because of certain clause. So it is the onus of the insurers to express or explain potentially devastating terms in a policy to the buyer or the insured in clear ways. And this was also discussed today in the plenary session, expressing policy terms clearly, effective disclosures, and things like that. The other issue that we identified was that there is a misconception or perception that there is age discrimination in terms of pricing. Now, pricing which results in high premiums for older people may create this impression, and this was well captured in this finding of the travel survey in 2012, which states that the age loading built into travel insurance premiums is seen by many but not all respondents as discriminatory. This is not necessarily the case, however, because insurance premiums of any kind are risk-based, and age is one of the risk factors travel insurers usually explicitly identify in their product disclosure statements. So, however, this does raise the question of new pricing methods. Again, we'll look at this later. Then there is the case of age discrimination in terms of accessibility of insurance. And the two case studies that I have here, one is from Income Protection. It's about a gentleman who is 69 years of age, self-employed, does not have access to illness insurance because he has been deemed too old for the insurance. He has some access to accident cover, but only till he is going to turn 70. I would like you to ponder on his comment that the government encourages us to work after retirement age, but does not care that the insurance companies say we are uninsurable. The next example is from volunteer insurance. Again, a person above 75 years of age who met with a terrible accident while volunteering and stayed in coma for 6 months and then later passed away. Now, the organization for which he was volunteering said that he was not covered by the insurance policy because he was too old. My question is, if he was young enough to volunteer, then why was he too old to be covered by an insurance policy? So, do the general insurers need to look into providing new products or extending their covers? So with that, I'll wrap up, and just key message is that there is great potential, and given the potential, we need to address these challenges. Now I'll pass on to Grace.
Thanks, Suruchi. Suruchi has talked about the silver tsunami and also some of the challenges the industry might want to address to better meet the needs of the silver population. I hope by now all of you should realize that when we refer to the term silver tsunami, we do not mean this. Rather, we mean something more serious, which is we believe that the silver population presents great potential to the general insurance industry. I'll now continue our presentation today with a discussion around age-based pricing. Let's start with a quick scan of the current landscape. Is there a price differential by age across various products? For motor vehicle type insurance, what we found is price is generally a decreasing function of age up to around the age of 65. Thereafter, it becomes an increasing function of age. Now, the increase in price post the age of 65 may be reasonable if we take into account the range of age-related cognitive changes, for example, the decline in reaction times, the decline in clarity of vision and hearing, reduced muscle strength and flexibility, which may increase risky driving behavior. For home insurance, the price appears to be a decreasing function of age. However, the variation across age bands appears to be rather minimal. What we found really interesting is the observation for travel insurance. Prices are generally flat up to the age of 50. Beyond the age of 60, prices start to increase exponentially, even if no pre-existing medical condition is assumed. The majority of insurers require medical assessments for those above the age of 70, with many not offering quotes to 90-year-olds and above. The exponential increase in price may be justified on the basis that medical costs incurred while traveling overseas are likely to be more expensive the older the individuals. For example, UK data showed that people in the late 60s are 2.5 times more likely to make a claim, and their average claim cost is 5.5 times greater than that of people in the early 20s. Now, while this is true, it is important to acknowledge that there is increasing demand within the older population for travel insurance, as more and more of us desire to and are able to travel to old age. In the UK, for example, there are charities such as Help the Age, which has stepped in and provided comprehensive travel insurance for the older population. Without these charities, age restrictions and premium loadings has meant that the demand of the older population for travel insurance has not been adequately met at present. What our simple scan of the current landscape shows us is there is some price differential by age, and the relationship between price and age does not seem unreasonable. The next question which we ask ourselves is it valid to use age as a rating factor? This brings us to our next slide. Let's look at some of the arguments for and against using age as a rating factor. Under the four category, age is well defined and it is easily verifiable. It also has strong predictive influence over certain claim outcomes, as it can be a good proxy for a number of characteristics such as experience, maturity, financial stability, health, and physical capability. As such, age can be a valid and powerful risk determinant. Also, proponents of age-based rating argue that growing old is a normal part of life, hence the older population do not require specific or additional protection. Furthermore, if the younger people are subject to higher premiums due to higher perceived risk, for example, in motor vehicle insurance, it may not be equitable if the older population is exempted from such a requirement. On the other hand, there are also increasing concerns that, similar to gender and race, people do not possess control over their age. Hence, it is not fair to discriminate against individuals on the basis of their age, which is something that they don't have control of. There are also critics who question the accuracy of using age as a rating factor. This is as age-based rating may be based on generalized assumptions or social stereotypes, which may be inaccurate and may no longer be true given the increasing diversity within the older population. There are also some concerns that there is lack of transparency in age-based underwriting. For example, that raised by the Australian Law Reform Commission, which observed that the data relied upon by insurers to set their age caps and premiums were not publicly available. Let's look at some of the development overseas in terms of age-based rating. In 2011, the EU Gender Directive ruling prohibited insurers from using gender as a rating factor. Following this, there's a growing debate around whether, similar to pricing based on gender, pricing based on age is discriminatory. A survey in the EU in 2010 has also indicated that most customer complaints regarding discrimination in the financial services sector resulted from age discrimination. We thought the findings of this survey is worth a moment of pause and reflection. What we normally hear about or read about in the media are often discrimination cases around gender, disability, and race. But in actual fact, most customer complaints regarding discrimination comes from age. Isn't this interesting? We also would like to note that if a decision is reached in the EU prohibiting insurers from using age as a rating factor, precedents may be set for Australia going forward. Now, arguments aside, how relevant is age as a rating factor? In the past, when the proportion of the older population is small, age may have been a reasonable proxy for the underlying attributes. Going forward, the proportion of the older population is becoming larger, and in 2 decades' time, the silver population may make up 40% of the entire Australian population. For such a significant group of people, age may no longer be a sound proxy for the underlying attributes. Technological advancements have also meant that insurers can now capture, store, and process large volumes of data quicker in a cost-efficient manner. This may reduce the need of using proxies in their underwriting process. We also now have social media information, which can be used to better understand the customer's preferences and risk profile, which in turn allows the insurers to better capture the nuances of their customers without the need of using proxies such as age. Technological advancements have also meant that insurers now have more options to capture the relevant data. A good example of this is the introduction of the telematics device within motor vehicle insurance by some overseas insurers as well as by QBE in Australia. The telematics device allows insurers to monitor and record the driving behaviors of the policyholder, and as such allows risk rating to be done on a more personalized basis rather than being done on a proxy basis, for example, based on age. With new data sources such as this, age as a rating factor and as a proxy is likely to be of reduced relevance and be less justifiable going forward. The population in Australia is aging, and with this, market needs is shifting. A study in the US in 2013 has identified shifting market needs as the biggest potential market disruptors over the next 5 years for the general insurance industry. Other factors are technology, financial environment, and regulations as summarized in the graph in this slide. Today, we're already seeing signs of market disruptors changing the general insurance landscape relevant to the civil population. We'll discuss some of these examples in the next slide. One example is we're seeing a small number of specialist senior insurers, such as APIA and Seniors Insurance, which are offering products which specifically target the older population and their needs. The products offered by these insurers may be more attractive due to better product coverage, price, or service. And this may potentially lead to a change in the market share of insurers going forward unless the non-specialist insurers change their relevant product or service attributes to compete with these specialist insurers. We're also seeing a transformation in the pricing approaches to a more personalized basis. One example of this is the telematics device, which I've talked about earlier, allowing pricing based on actual experience. We were also seeing companies like UE, who are offering tailor-made products and pricing based on the customer's individual needs and risk profile. For example, pricing based on the number of kilometers driven in motor vehicle insurance. We are also seeing products which are specifically targeting the older population. For example, the seniors travel insurance offered by insurers such as WorldCare. These products are introduced to fill a gap in the market, for example, due to the unavailability of cover or unaffordability of cover. Insurers who first introduce these products may gain a first mover advantage and build a favorable reputation among its customers. As a result, the other insurers may find it difficult to break into the market in future once these products are successful and once these insurers have managed to successfully establish their position. And we also have products which target activities. A good example of this is Shannon's, which provide insurance to motoring enthusiasts for their vintage and classic cars. Arguably, a large proportion of motoring enthusiasts is made up by older individuals. Hence, by targeting this group of individuals, Shannon's is essentially responding to a demand of the older population without limiting its customer base to older customers. Now, time for a quick quiz. Here's a question for you. Raise your hand if you own a smartphone. Whoa. So I would say nearly all of us today own a smartphone. Or to be safer, 90% of us own a smartphone. If we think about it, 7 years ago, just 7 years ago, before the iPhone was first introduced, we don't even know what a smartphone is, but now a lot of us can't part with it. What I hope to illustrate with this simple example is the marketplace is changing rapidly, and a lot can be gained if the right product is introduced at the right time. This brings us nicely to my next slide. What are the plausible market disruptors going forward? The pace of change, as illustrated by the smartphone example, makes it difficult to hypothesize what the market will look like. In the interest of wider discussion, we have brainstormed a few ideas among ourselves, but we acknowledge that they are by no means all-encompassing. One idea that we have is based on the fact that the increase in medical costs in Australia may create a demand among the older population for medical tourism. Therefore, there may be a demand for a travel insurance product which provides cover for trips overseas to access medical services. We are also using more and more electrical appliances on a daily basis. One question that we have is, would current or old wiring configurations in our houses keep up with modern electrical demands? Would this lead to a need to revise the pricing approach within home insurance policy to factor in the increased risk of living in houses with dated wiring configuration? The older population may be a high-risk group affected by this change, as if they have lived in their houses for many, many years, there's a high likelihood that the wiring in their house may be dated. And in a few years' time, driverless car may even become mainstream. And when this happens, we may see a transformation in the pricing approach within motor vehicle insurance, as the profile of drivers, such as their age, may have a limited impact on the claims experience. Another thing to consider is there are organizations today, such as Google, which are collecting a wealth of information about us. These organizations may enter the market in future and introduce sophisticated risk-based pricing of individuals not afforded by a typical insurer. And age-based pricing may even be prohibited by regulation on the basis that it is discriminatory. And this will lead to a forced change within the industry where insurers can no longer use age as a rating factor. Well, not in this slide. Earlier today in a plenary session, we also discussed a few of the potential market disruptors, for example, insurance for mobile scooters. So all these examples illustrate that market disruptors are essentially a form of product enhancements to respond to trends affecting the marketplace, and where there's demand, there's product innovation. So all these trends do not necessarily act in isolation. Rather, they may interact with each other, resulting in complex outcome. I'll now pass on to Huda, which will explore the strategies which insurers can adopt to respond to the emerging trend relevant to the silver population. Over to you, Huda.
Thanks, Grace and Suruchi. So, what have we talked about today so far? We have told you about the aging population. We have introduced the silver tsunami to you. We have told you about the age-based rating and how it may not be relevant in the future. So where does that leave us as general insurers here? And that brings me to the strategy going forward. Sorry. And that's what I'll be talking about. What is a strategy that general insurers can do from going on from here? And really, what are the challenges around it? And what are the opportunities that we have now? So, general insurers are all businesses, and most businesses sit down and spend a reasonable amount of time coming up with a business strategy, because a business which is successful tends to have a focused strategy. Of course, as Jeff said this morning, execution goes without saying. But anyway, what we have done is we have narrowed down the four main strategies that a general insurer may adopt. A general insurer may choose to be an innovator. It would be at the forefront of research and development and actually predict the trends that might occur in the market and take advantage of those by developing new products and services. Alternatively, it could be an expansionist. It would really look at the current market segment that it penetrates and look at ways to actually continue, supplying products and services to this sector. Another option is to be a fast follower. Fast followers may not invest as much in research and development, but actually follow in the successful footsteps of the innovators and the expansionists. Finally, not all companies are big, and some general insurers may actually be quite small, and their long-term strategy for business development would be a series of short-term strategies. And in that case, they'd be a survivor. They would actually just, invest in products which do not require that much capital, are generally low risk. Now, none of these strategies are right or wrong. It's really about which one of them is really a fit for your business at this point in time. So how does this all tie to the silver tsunami? Now, we have told you time and time again throughout that people are healthier and they're more independent and they're living longer. So just the other day, I was on the bus and this elderly lady walked in with her daughter. And she sat down next to me, so I started having a conversation with her. It started with her, you know, taste in jewelry and quickly ended up at her love for travel. And she told me that, oh, just last year I did a Europe trip, road trip on my own. And I was like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Because she was, you know, well into her 70s, and she was telling me that she did a solo road trip, something I would think twice about. And that's the thing. To put it in terms of facts, life expectancy at birth has actually increased by 35 years since the turn of the century, as Suruchi also pointed out. All these people cannot be expected to just sit at home and do knitting or something like that. They're active people. They want to travel. They want to perhaps even get another degree. Who knows? And that brings me to the idea of the third age. Third age can be used to describe people who are aging, who are in the older population group. However, with the larger older population, the third age is no longer a homogeneous group. There's actually an early third age and a later third age. Early third age comprising of people perhaps in their 50s to 70s who are still quite active and want to do things like travel and perhaps even continue working. And then there's the later third age, people who might be in their 80s who might need some more dependency and day-to-day care. So, coming back to what does this mean for general insurers. If a general insurer can actually identify these two distinct groups and the needs and demands of those two groups and target them accordingly, there are immense opportunities. And that, of course, beckons the question, where is this split between the early third age and the later third age? Is it 76? Is it 85? Is it 82? And in my honest opinion, I don't think there is a right answer. I think the answer really would be a moving sort of age over time. And as the demographics change, this age would have to change. So, now that we have identified these two distinct groups, what can general insurers do to reach out to these two groups? And what are the real challenges in that? So, of course, with product strategy, marketing is one of the first things to consider. And stereotyping is a major issue that general insurers will need to consider going forward. Already there's a sentiment that elderly population is stereotyped. And now that we know that it's no longer a homogenous group, this is a bigger risk. And associated with that is the risk of marketing backlash. If marketing campaigns are stereotyped or they're just targeting the older population, what happens to your younger customer base? You do not want to alienate either of your customer bases. So how do you go about doing that correctly? Another thing to consider is ageless marketing. Could potentially a general insurer market its product without actually considering age, but rather target a demand? So as Grace talked about, Shannon's is a very good example of that. Finally, a very important part of product strategy is sales channels. Traditionally, general insurance has been sold through direct sales, tied agents, and the rest. However, this is the age of the internet. Everything's done over the internet. And a couple of weeks ago, I was at the Department of Immigration, and this older gentleman walked in, and he talked to the lady at reception, and he wanted some information. And the lady told him, oh, actually, the information's quite detailed, so I can't give it to you in person, but it's all on our website. And I was thinking to myself, you know, stereotypical me, and going like, oh, probably it's on the website, and, you know, the older gentleman does not use internet. That's probably why he doesn't know what's out there. And his reply shocked me a little bit because he was like, oh, I've already been to your website. It's just I couldn't find the right information on your website. And that made me think about two things. One, whether or we like it or not, the older population is online. We might not accept their friend request on Facebook, but they're there. And the other thing was, are our websites just too complicated? Do general insurers need to simplify websites and general insurers and everyone else really in the market so that they're more intuitive? And that's something to think about. However, there is some really good news for general insurers, and that is the older population is probably the most loyal customers you'll ever get. Research shows that 36% of the older customers actually have never considered moving their providers and stay with their same providers for 20 years. So what are the opportunities here? What can a general insurer learn from this? Can they actually take advantage of this and do something about it? So bringing the two things together, what are the possible things that can be done? And good customer service is always, always a winner. A financial sentiment survey for senior citizens actually stated that what older population values the most is integrity and trust from financial services provider. So that's something to think about. So coming to the first point there, sales and call centers, they are the really forefront of providing customer services. And these days, a lot of them are located overseas, staffed by 20 to 30-year-olds, which is perfectly fine. It's the trend of the world. We're having a session tomorrow on offshoring, so it makes sense. However, this movie, The Royal Marigold Hotel, captured the concept very well. Because whilst these people are very efficient at their jobs, they might not have the proper training to deal with the problems of the older population. They might just not understand issues. And that's where general insurers could think about things. Can they do something to provide them the proper training to deal with the older population? Can we make things simpler for them? Second point over there, misrepresentation and mis-selling. The financial ombudsman keeps reiterating this point. What can general insurers do? Maybe if someone buys a policy online, they get a call from someone, from a sales agent, and tell them exactly what the pre-existing conditions they're excluding from their travel insurance policy. Possible. The other two points are quite interconnected. What can general insurers do to improve the customer end-to-end experience? Can we streamline the sales process, the claims process, and the underwriting? How can we make it more efficient? How can the general insurers really provide to the customer, to the older customer? And last but not least, what are the general insurance companies going to do about loyalty? How can you reward loyalty for your customers? If they have been on your books for 20 years, surely, we can think of ways to help them, and perhaps general insurers could offer them discounts or something of the likes. So there have been quite a few ideas discussed. So let's take a moment, step back, and think about what we have talked about today. We've told you that the population is aging. The silver tsunami is here. With the aging population, the population structure changes. The attitudes to health, wealth, working, needs and demands, and everything else related to that changes. We have also told you that age-based rating may not be relevant anymore. There might be other things to use to price your policies better. What we are saying is there's a lot of change here. And changes are very difficult sometimes to adapt to. But the one very, very good thing about changes is they bring with them a lot of opportunities. And that's where the general insurance industry is at. There's a lot of opportunity out there. And with that, I'll thank you for your time and open the floor for discussion.
Okay, we've got some time for questions. Does anyone have a question? Start the ball rolling. So with insurers, when they do insure risks, they may not insure a certain risk because it's unprofitable. So that might be a reason that they are not offering certain products to the older people. Isn't that a perfectly valid way to be insuring risks?
So yes. So what we are saying is, when the proportion of the older population is small, yes, we can exclude them. But the proportion of the older population is getting bigger and bigger, and it may even constitute 40% of the older population. For if we exclude this segment of population, we're potentially losing this huge market share. So we believe that the general insurance industry has more to think about, and there's merit in this segment of population.
Thank you.
Oh, hi, Paul Dreesen from Taylor Fry. Suppose hypothetically you rate motor insurance, but you don't rate using age. Instead, you rate using years of driving experience. Is that more or less discriminatory in your view? And is it more or less appealing to the public in your view?
So I think there's two.
So I think there's two types of discrimination. One is discrimination based on factors that are beyond within your control. For example, if I choose to smoke, I think it's quite fair if I pay a higher premium. And there's also discrimination based on factors which are out of your control, for example, age. And I think that that is where the concerns around gender, race, and age, this is where the discussion is currently at, and this is where people are concerned that these factors are resulting in discrimination in the pricing process. So, yeah.
Forward, Canada also actually does rate motor insurance based on travel driving experience, like years of driving experience compared to age. So it's already happening overseas. So it's something to think about in Australia, possibly.
Yeah, and I would say the introduction of the telematics device is really kind of setting the new direction forward. So insurers are starting to look at ways where we can price on a more personalized basis. So if I drive more, or if I'm a more careful driver, so I have less claims incidents as a result, I'm entitled to a lower premium.
Hi, James from KPMG. You mentioned more in general about age discriminatory factors, but not too long ago, I remember that I was still paying high premiums because I was under 25 and I didn't regard myself as a hoon. So I guess when it comes to those sorts of discussions, do you think that will be something that changes in the future the same, or will that still be regarded as not a big as issue as the silver tsunami?
So I think we mentioned about this before as well. So if we are going to charge the younger individuals higher premiums because their perceived risk is higher, you know, why do we need to exempt the older population from this requirement? So if we are going to still have age-based rating, we believe everyone should pay for it. But if we are going to say it's discriminatory to price based on age, then the insurers will need to think about new ways to kind of price for their risk, looking for new ways which can better explain the experience of the policyholders rather than using age, which is really a proxy.
Hi, Amanda Aitken from Actuarial Edge. I found it really interesting when you talk about one of the potential rating factors being information that's provided on social media. So I think it's generally fairly well understood now that something that you paste on Facebook, for example, a post on Facebook, shows my age, could come back to bite you in the future. I just didn't realise that it could actually bite you in the form of higher insurance premiums potentially. So interested in any thoughts on or comments about that?
Well, thanks for that. So these are just one of the potential ways that we think the insurers one of potential information avenue that the insurers can use to, you know, price. So we're not saying that it is the case. We're just putting it out there that might be the case. So good point there. Thank you.
Yeah, and as we discussed in the morning before, that, you know, there's a lot of grey area around all the things that are on social media, things like Uber, where do we draw the line, what's legal, what's not legal. So it's a grey area, but hopefully, you know, sooner or later we'll know better.
Thank you for your time.
Any more questions? I just had one more. When do you think we'll start to see the impact of the silver tsunami coming through?
We think it's already happening now. The older population the proportion of the older population is much bigger now than it was 10 years ago, than it was 20 years ago. So I think it's already happening now. And people are, you know, are more active, they are more mobile, they are working longer. So the time is now. Time is of the essence, and we believe the industry needs to start thinking about this issue now and really think about what are the opportunities that they can tap into.
Yeah. Well, very interesting and thought-provoking presentation, and one that's going to affect us all by the sounds of it. So please join me in thanking Grace, Sarucci, and Peter.